Hey everyone, welcome to the Mobile User Acquisition Show. In the Mobile User Acquisition Show, we talk about how to use mobile user acquisition strategies to grow your app quickly and capital efficiently. The Mobile User Acquisition Show is presented by me, Shamant Rao, Mobile Growth Leader and founder and CEO of the mobile growth consulting firm, Rocketship HQ. Each episode includes strategies, tips, and pointers from the leading edge of mobile user acquisition that you can use to unlock tremendous growth for your app in a sustainable and capital-efficient manner.
Our guest today is Seth Berman, the Senior Director of Performance Marketing at Adobe. Today, we take a small detour from UAM marketing to delve into what has affected the world for the last year, the pandemic and the resulting remote work situation. So it talks about how his team had to cope with moving remote almost overnight. He examines the unique learnings he's experienced as a leader and how he plans to use them in the future. In what ways is remote work an equalizer? In what ways does it make it easier for underrepresented folks to hide? We look at these dynamics and many more questions. And after a year, remote work is set to end, at least for some companies. And how does that look like for teams that will get back to their offices? We discuss all of this and much, much more in today's episode. Enjoy. I'm very excited to welcome Seth Berman to the Mobile User Acquisition Show. Seth, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to have you because we've certainly crossed paths digitally in many ways for a long, long time and physically, of course. And excited to have you speak about a topic that it would appear is somewhat peripherally linked to mobile and marketing and acquisition, but is very, very central to everything we do. And certainly much, much more so because of everything that's happened in the last year and a year and a half. So I'm thrilled to talk about what work's going to look like and what's changed around work just lately. So I'd start by asking you about the lay of the land. Let's just say once we are all vaccinated in the last year or so, a lot of companies have gone remote. You've certainly managed very large teams that have been by force of circumstance, have had to go remote. So what does the long-term look like for knowledge work in terms of location and how we work and where we work?
Sure. First of all, I'll speak to this mostly from a US perspective because I'm located in the US and most familiar with what's happening here. I understand quite a bit of your audience is outside the US. And in fact, in the mobile app space, it's probably one of the more successful global industries relative to some other aspects of tech that are a little bit more concentrated in the Bay Area of the US. I see mobile and mobile games and productivity apps really happening everywhere. So I think that as an industry, the mobile app space is actually well ahead of the game. I work at Adobe, a very large established software company, and we have a lot of neighbors by us in San Jose and San Francisco. What I'm seeing so far is people see that it's possible to live anywhere, to work from anywhere. I think individuals are seeing that that's possible. Companies are seeing that that's possible. We're even seeing some companies offering the same pay to people regardless of where they live. So they're going from a completely office situation to a completely remote situation and offering to pay employees the same regardless of where they live. So if you are the world's best UA manager, you can get yourself hired by any company. You're not limited to the ones that are close to where you live. And for the people who are really the top of their craft, these folks can expect to earn more. They're going to have more opportunities. They're more in demand. So I think for people at the top of their craft who are working for companies, this is a very potentially positive change for folks like that. It also allows companies to hire talent anywhere. I know that as somebody who's hired for many roles in the Bay Area, it is incredibly competitive. It is very difficult to find great people at reasonable salaries. People have lots of other opportunities in addition to the one that they're working on right now. And so it's really challenging in concentrated geographical areas like the Bay Area to hire and retain great people. This also opens up a huge benefit for companies. If the best person for the job is in Cleveland, Ohio, instead of San Francisco, California, then it could be possible to hire that person. And that person might be better than the person we could have gotten locally, for example. So I think that definitely opens things up. Now, the flip side to that is that it does put pressure over time on wages for especially kind of average performers. Nobody wants to think of themselves as a B player, but there are B players out there. If a company can hire somebody anywhere, then they're not necessarily going to need to settle for anything less than the best just by hiring locally. Whereas the top talent might have an advantage, I think the average talent could find themselves being disadvantaged over time because there's simply more competition for similar jobs. Then that's just domestically. Then we talk about the international impact. It's been quite a while that jobs have been moving to India or the Philippines from the US in the past few years. In the prior administration, maybe reverse that a little bit, given the difficulties with immigration and people going back and forth and coronavirus preventing the ability to even have people come over and train them and go back and these kinds of things. We've certainly offshored a lot of work out of the US in the last 20 years, and some of that's come back, but I think we're gonna see more of it, whereas it's been mostly places like India. I think we're gonna see more and more of it in the Western Hemisphere into Latin America, or potentially South America, places that are within a few hours from a time zone standpoint of the US, and in the Eastern Hemisphere, there could be similar opportunities. And maybe this is also the thing that over time really helps the economy in Africa and helps workers in Africa play an even bigger part in the global economy. Right now, it's cool to be able to work at home or rent an Airbnb, maybe with your friends and working from anywhere. That has been nice for a lot of people, but I also think that there's a potential downside for folks that maybe people aren't considering at this time.
Yeah, right. And the world's a very different place. Growing up in India, we heard the word globalization a lot, but even then, I don't think we registered it in the way that is true today. And it's certainly a whole new dimension to the world being flat and all of the world's talent being accessible. I'm curious just about your experience as well as to how things changed and shifted for you guys over the last year and a half, because it's my understanding that you guys have had a centralized office structure in San Francisco. I know you guys do have an international presence. When your team had to go remote by force of circumstance, what changed abruptly? What had to change in the daily cadence? How did the team's work style have to change almost overnight?
Adobe is a global company. And even in the Bay Area, we have multiple San Francisco buildings. We have multiple buildings in San Jose. And so even before, it wasn't unusual to have a meeting with somebody in San Francisco in another building, or even sometimes in the same building, and people are on video. So that was an interesting thing that happened anyway. But yes, for the most part, we went into the office every day. My team is split between San Francisco and San Jose. And for every meeting, there is usually people in person and sometimes some people also on video in another location. So the first week in March 2020, that all changed. And we have all been working from not the office since then. I think one of the biggest benefits that I've seen of that is it really is an equalizer. When everybody is on the screen in the same size box, it's a complete equalizer in terms of people having a voice and there's no special seats at the table. There are these dynamics that happen in in-person meetings that put people in sort of positions of power or positions of less power in the physical meetings. And there are so many aspects of that. But when you're on video and everybody is the same size rectangle, there are certainly a lot of disadvantages to it, but it's really equalizing. No matter who is on the call, in a meeting, everybody has the same real estate, and it definitely has a huge benefit from that standpoint. The other thing I'd say is, while folks who have children have had a lot of ups and downs with this thing, I know certainly we have a child, and for the first few months, it was extremely, extremely challenging to be working and childcare simultaneously. But on the flip side, folks have really appreciated the ability to integrate. Not having commute time is incredibly helpful. Yeah. The things that you can do when you're not commuting, I do yoga and meditation every single day, pretty much. That was not the case before COVID, actually. And so there are things like that that have really opened up for me and for others on the team that allow more flexibility, that allow being around family more, that allow you to take care of the things you need to take care of without the stress of commuting and things like that. So I think that's been a big benefit. In terms of communication, I would say that Adobe didn't have a writing culture. I think the companies that have a writing culture and work more asynchronously probably are better suited to completely distributed work. Mm-hmm. So companies like Basecamp, DoorDash, or Amazon for that matter, even though they highly value in-person work. Those companies who have and had a strong writing culture and asynchronous work model, I imagine that they are having an easier time of it. I would say for us, it's much more like I'm in meetings, and most of the people on my team, it's like meetings from beginning to end of the day.
Yeah.
And then work after that. That is pretty challenging. And I would love to see us do more writing, do more asynchronous work, have fewer meetings. But I would say that we haven't been super successful at moving the culture of the entire company from a synchronous model to an asynchronous model.
Yeah, right. Especially with a large team, it becomes very challenging to have everybody shift to written communication rather than verbal. Our team started fully remote, partly because I was backpacking at the time, but I think that almost forced us to be writing focused. And I think as we've dealt with other folks, I recognize it's not true for every culture. And it's not always the best in every situation. It just happens to work for us. And out of curiosity, when you said remote work was an equalizer in many ways, was it your observation that this helped folks that could be considered underrepresented to speak up more and be heard more? Was that a side effect at all of this?
On the one hand, it can allow for that, but really we as leaders have to draw that out because it's also easier to hide out in a remote situation. It's easier to turn off your video and not say anything. And sometimes you can't see everybody who's in the meeting on the screen at the same time. When you're in a room, it's harder to hide out if you're in a room with somebody than it is when you're on video. So when I talk about it being an equalizer, when I'm in meetings with the most senior leaders of the company, I feel more comfortable. But I do think it's easier to hide out. So you have to really make an effort to ensure that people are taking advantage of that.
Understood. That certainly makes sense. When you spoke of how writing heavy cultures can really thrive in something like this, you talked about what had to change in the culture and sort of the day-to-day work, but also in terms of the communication tools and collaboration tools, what had to change as everybody just went home?
I don't think that much changed, honestly, in our communication, in the usage of communication tools as a result of remote work. Mm-hmm. I think we would have benefited from that. And to be clear, the company is doing great. We've done more of a lift and shift of what we were doing in person to what we're doing remotely. And it's working for us, but it's exhausting. It's exhausting to do that same thing in a different context.
Is that an example that you can think of?
I think we all can relate to the Zoom fatigue. It's exhausting to be on six, seven, 8 hours of meetings almost consecutively on video. There's just something about it that has more physical impact than being in 6, 7, or 8 hours of meeting in the office.
Yeah, you're not looking at screens if you're doing it in office.
Yes.
Zoom fatigue is certainly a thing. And in office, you could, I imagine, nudge somebody for a 5-minute chat rather than putting 30 minutes on calendar. And it almost seems like you have to put a significant amount of time on calendar.
I imagine it resulted in more usage of Slack on the team in general. I was a Slack power user prior, so I'm not sure that my usage has changed too much, but I do imagine that for a lot of people, they have significantly increased their Slack usage.
Certainly. What aspects of remote work worked better than you thought they would, and what worked worse?
I guess if I compare it to going back to the office, I think some of the things that I am concerned about as a people manager is fairness. It used to be basically everybody had to be in the office every day for the most part. That was the agreement. When we go back, it will be something more flexible than that, where people will need to be in the office 2 or 3 days a week. I'm curious to see how it goes managing potentially 50 different arrangements, where each person might have their own arrangement, and finding the boundaries as a company and for each individual that are the right thing to do or work for each person and work for the company. For companies that are doing a hybrid approach, which is what Adobe intends to do, there's potentially a material amount of overhead for managers that they didn't have before in terms of all the different arrangements. If it is 2 to 3 days a week in the office, okay, well, we have to coordinate those 2 or 3 days a week, or why are we coming in? Right now, it's actually quite simple. We're all on video. There's no logistics. While I miss seeing my coworkers and going out for a drink, it's also a lot simpler. It's a lot simpler than I expect it will be when we're in this hybrid office and remote situation.
I certainly recognize and agree that there can be such a managerial overhead if it's 2 days a week. Just even coordinating those things can be a big deal. In theory, it would be like, oh, everybody works remote, everyone's evaluated on performance, there's no overhead. So the way you look at it, how does practice diverge from theory, if at all it does?
I would love for people to do whatever works for them if they're delivering on their responsibilities. I think in practice, people do pay attention to what other people's situation is. One can't help but be impacted by what some other person is doing. You know, it's just hard to tell one person that you have to be in the office 2 days a week and another person that they don't have to be in the office 2 days. And as managers, we work for a company and we're trying to follow what the company has decided. So we are representatives of the company and being supportive of whatever the company decides. It's really those nuances. The difference in practice is the company policy and how do we follow that in a respectful, productive, effective, and fair way. And fairness is very much based on perception. And one person's perception of fair might be different than another person's perception of fair. And one person might not care, and somebody else might care a lot.
I see. For a company that's fully remote, from what you're saying, it seems like people could just perceive that other folks on the team have different responsibilities or even different pay. And that opacity could just become a problem. Am I understanding that correctly?
Well, the opacity is there no matter what. I think that's just how most companies operate. There are things that are not transparent. I think these are all the things that we have to wrestle with. I think a completely remote situation would work. I just wonder how the hybrid situation is going to work and what new things are going to come up. When you have some people in the office and some people on video, how is that going to go? Is that going to be as productive as everyone on video? Like everyone on video is a known thing. but then video and some people in person is a little bit less of a known thing.
I see what you mean. With hybrid, there are going to be questions like, oh, how do you decide who comes in? And that's what you alluded to.
And that 2-minute conversation you have after the meeting happens with the person who is there in person, and the person who is on video isn't in that conversation.
Exactly.
And those things, those micro moments,
those add up.
Happen over and over.
Exactly. With your experience with your teams going remote, what kind of people have you observed coped better with remote work? And what kind of people coped worse?
I found that everyone has adapted extremely well. What I mentioned earlier, I would say the biggest challenge is people who have children. For people in the US who have children in public school, those children have not been in school. Some of them are just going back to school now. And so they've been working at home with children not in school for over a year or about a year. I would say for those folks, it's nothing about them or types of people or personality. Like, I haven't really seen differences on those vectors. I've found really every single person that I've experienced has adapted quite well. I haven't noticed differences in effectiveness between people, other than the fact that the folks who have children at home have it really, really difficult.
Yeah. I don't have kids, but certainly I've had friends who do. So it's certainly been very challenging in very different ways. And my parents do babysitting for their neighbors now for that reason, because their neighbors and I take the kids. I know you've alluded in many ways to many aspects of team dynamics. I'm curious how you've noticed and seen team performance evaluations or assessments, or even like informal ones like one-on-ones, change on your teams as folks just shifted remote.
I would say the biggest challenge with performance management isn't necessarily related to the remote versus in person. The challenges, in my experience, have been the things that we've been navigating and being sensitive, empathetic, and understanding of different things that different individuals are going through. That's probably always been the case and probably something that we all should be paying more attention to. I think the difference is in this last year, we're more aware of individual circumstances and how those might be impacting people's work. That's really what I would say I have tuned more into what's going on for people. And letting them know that they can ask for help. And also to the most important thing for people who are facing challenges outside of their work is really to communicate and set expectations. And for me, as long as people are communicating and setting expectations, I've got their back. That's probably been the biggest challenge and the biggest difference is really increasing sensitivity to people's circumstances and supportiveness of those circumstances. And certainly holding people accountable while allowing for individual circumstances and having space for that.
Right. I would have thought it's easier to check in when you're meeting in person, but it sounds to me like if you're meeting them in person, it's somewhat easy to take that for granted, whereas if you're connecting remotely, you're making an intentional effort to actually ask and check in. I think that makes a lot of sense. As people go back to in-office work, and I imagine you guys will, it's my understanding that you guys are not planning to be forever remote. What, if anything, might be some of the things you see you or your teams doing differently based on your learnings and experiences so far?
Certainly at first, I think we'll be more intentional about the in-person time. Having not had it, I think we all appreciate it more. I will aim to have set days that for those coming to the office that we all come to the office on, you know, the same couple days a week, for example. And if people want to come more often, they're certainly welcome to. But I do think some more structure around that office time to ensure that we're having that connection as a team. And also, I would say the social aspect is something that's really missing. Because right now we have 30-minute meeting or 60-minute meeting, and it's a meeting with a specific agenda. And that's what we talk about. Of course, we yeah. might have a little bit of chat before or after, but for the most part, the social aspect has really fallen away. And the virtual substitutes are not the same. So having more limited time together in the office will push us to put more value on it, to be more structured about certain things, and to plan in some social opportunities so that we continue to know each other better outside of whatever our specific job or contribution is in work.
Yeah, certainly. Things will shift back, but hopefully there's some reflection, some learnings you can take back to going back to office. So I think we are coming up on time. So this is perhaps a good place for us to wrap. Thank you so much for being on the show. But before we go, can you tell folks how they can find out more about you and everything you do?
Sure. Well, I don't have a SoundCloud, which is the Twitter meme when you have a viral tweet. I don't really have anything to promote, but we are hiring at Adobe for people who are in the Bay Area. We have some lifecycle marketing jobs that we're hiring for. We actually have a mobile UA job coming up. So if you're interested in working at Adobe, you could email me, berman@adobe.com, and we can have a conversation about that.
Excellent. And we will link to the career section in the show notes just as well. And of course, we will link to your socials so people can connect with you just as well.
Right. Great. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you for being on the show. And I'm excited to put this out into the world very soon.
Thank you for listening to the Mobile User Acquisition Show. If any of this was helpful or instructive, I would love for you to leave us a review or rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast fix. This podcast takes a ton of time, effort, and love to produce, and I deeply value every review and every piece of feedback that you share. Thank you for listening, and I will look forward to sharing our next episode soon.